Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Your Questions Answered. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to answer your burning wrestling questions. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hamflett to take on the Q&A community. If you've sent us those questions at What Culture WWE, I'm at Adam Wilborn. He's at Michael Hamflett, if you want to continue the conversation after this. And let's dive straight into it, Hamflett. Let's start with this question, which, I'll be honest, we're going to be struggling with for the next few months, if not year or so, that comes from Vic Zulistim. Apologies. Oh, no, sorry. I've read his Twitter handle. I've realised what I've done there. Tim Vixulis. There we go. Comes from Tim and says, who do you truly believe will dethrone Roman and when?
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Vic. I feel like I'm Beth Phoenix on the NXT commentary desk, just in covering everybody, just in case. I don't know. I feel like, almost as if I've done this literally a lot lately, you could scroll through the WWE personnel page on Wikipedia and not find a single name worthy of it. It's a nice problem to have in a way, because you've got a super dominant champion and your job is to build somebody up to at least make people believe that they can beat him in the first attempt, you know? So you have, for so many guys, you've got one feud to try and build them up as a potential winner over Roman Reigns. And that might make stars in the wake of that feud, even if Roman wins in the end. I'll try and be positive and not just say, well, The Rock, because he'll come back and they'll not be able to resist the urge not to put the belt on him. Or Brock, because, you know, Vince gonna Vince. And I, you know, I'm just gonna sort of exhibit a bit of bias here, because he was so lovely to us and it was nice to be lovely back to him. Like, I gotta want Big E to do it. I gotta want it to be Big E. The New Day split last year seemed designed to give Big E that singles push on SmackDown. It hasn't really happened yet, but the teasers were awesome. The teasers were so good, in fact, that by about October, November, the perfect time to be doing this, we were fantasy booking Big E to win the Rumble. And then by the time it actually came around, it just didn't feel there. The more Big E is distanced from the belt, the more it feels like he could be a WrestleMania challenger. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a WrestleMania challenger is where Roman should lose the belt. So I, like, possibly at the risk of sounding too much like a mark, I'll go Big E, because I would rather you have that optimistic, feel-good conclusion to such an incredible reign than just a kind of panicked hot shot of putting it onto another already established major star.
Yeah, we got to caveat this by the fact of, you and I will inevitably book this reign to end at a Big Four pay-per-view with a major opponent he hasn't faced before, but WWE's going to WWE. It could end at bloody the revamped Vengeance or whatever it is against someone he's faced three times. And if they lose this time, they have to cut a leg off or something. Big E is a go-to answer. Absolutely. And I've been going to that answer for a while, but I'm going to stick with my booking and change the name just to change it up a little bit. I think he should drop the title at SummerSlam 2022, 2 years after his return, his dominant re-arrival back in WWE, saving that pay-per-view and breaking mine and Nicholas's streak of god-awful WWE pay-per-view. And if it's not Big E, I've plotted it out. I'll do it again for people who haven't heard me. I seem to mention it on every podcast or video that I do for What Culture. It is so simple, this. Don't screw it up, WWE, okay? John Cena at SummerSlam this year. Oh, bollocks. He can't stop him. At Survivor Series, let's have brand versus brand, and let's have Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, okay? No title on the line there. Probably wouldn't have him lose anyway, but regardless. Royal Rumble, let's have Edge versus Roman Reigns. He beats him, and they think, oh no, we can't stop him. So we better bring in The Rock. And even he can't beat him. One, two, three. The show goes off the air with them basically saying, what do we do now? And in the 4 months between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, if it's not Big E, WWE fans love a bit of LTST, okay? We love a bit of history. Why not? It's not going to happen. But if it's me in charge and you can actually book it well, have it be Keith Lee, who made his name on the main roster fighting Roman Reigns all those years ago at Survivor Series. And it might be Keith Lee because they haven't got the chance to ruin him in the interim, because unfortunately, he's not in WWE at the moment. It has to be someone who isn't already a star, isn't already a legend, and can stick around and do some other stuff for them.
Love it. And if we are allowing ourselves to dream beyond the obvious, all the headliners, the megastars that you've listed, Slapjack.
Well, let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Because, I mean, who bloody knows? It's a very, very exciting time to be a WWE fan, because it seems like finally, maybe just I'm getting giddy off the back of Raw, they might actually be trying now, Michael Hamflett. Who knows? Not to ruin the mood here, Hamflett, but the second question today comes from one Matt Reigns, who says,
Jesus Christ.
Hi, yes, Matt Reigns again, Sidgwick mega fan. Now that we're just about to the midway point of 2021, what has been your favourite match of the first 6 months in any promotion? Cheers, Wilborn. He knew you were on this podcast. He's only directed that cheers at me. I sense there's a bit more of an egg than usual. But yeah, favourite match of this year, Hamflett?
Favourite match of this year? Well, we've talked about how you can do squashes really well. So I'd probably say me versus Matt Reigns on the WrestleMania stream. They can sometimes be the most entertaining ones. No, thank you, Matt, for your question. Well done for getting your wife up probably quite early to type the tweet out for you, because we know you can't do it yourself. Much appreciated. I would say for me, because I was completely wrapped up in the emotion of it, of the spectacle, which we'd all missed, and them being able to wrestle themselves away from a wretched storyline, Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, main event of WrestleMania, ticks all the boxes for me. Just a special, like a special moment, and then a match that delivered upon how special that moment felt. That stare down where Bianca can't fight back the tears and Sasha is desperately trying is the sort of incredible WrestleMania moment that WWE could never put a TM on, no matter how hard they tried. And it could have overwhelmed the wrestlers, and then the match could have under-delivered on those expectations. They're like the massive expectations set by how big and history-making the whole thing felt. And it was even better than those expectations. The storyline was minging, and they were giving, which, you know, disadvantages wrestlers going in, because the angle was nowhere near as hot as it needed to be. And they worked up from that. And I just have so much love for their talents and their abilities that you just got to see them in their purest distilled form, rather than also off the back of a great story. They should have been given that advantage. They weren't, and they still over-delivered in the spot. I loved Kenny Omega and Rey Fénix, because, like, there are very few times, I know this feels like a dated and slightly cliched criticism, but there are still, for me, very few times where I've felt the New Japan pangs of a Kenny Omega match in AEW. Not always as a particular slight on Omega. Some, like, he's a weekly TV wrestler almost now. He's banged up. But there was some magic in the air in that Omega Phoenix match that night. And similarly, magic in the air, because Daly's place has often been a place of magic air. Jungle Boy and Dax Harwood.
Ooh.
Just a glorious throwback, proper babyface, proper heel, straight singles match. Loved that little period where, I mean, Christ, by the way, it's a crime how little FTR have wrestled on TV this year. But love that period where it felt like Dax and Cash were trying to outwork each other when given the opportunity. And every time Jungle Boy works, and we're recording this just before Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega at the weekend, every time Jungle Boy works, it feels like you can see like a video game ladder of him working his way up all the people en route to one day becoming AEW's top babyface star. And it's just lovely to see that progression too.
Like you, I am a fan of spectacle, of once-in-a-lifetime moments, first evers. So I'm going to have to go with the Zombie Lumberjack match because, I mean, hello, how many other matches have we had? No, I'm referring in that build-up to Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa, the lights-out unsanctioned match from Dynamite. It blew me away. I really, really enjoyed that. And, yeah, I feel it absolutely merits a mention. And it's something I will go back and watch when we look back on this year and look back on some of our favourite matches. And sticking with the WrestleMania theme, I really enjoyed, absolutely. My brain automatically, I have to say, when we got asked this question, automatically went to Sasha and Bianca because it just felt like such a real moment in time, that match. I also really enjoyed, and I will go back and watch it in a few months' time, Seth Rollins and Cesaro, even though it was just so bloody simple. It was just bad guy, guy spins bad guy around, can't quite do it initially because bad guy's targeted his arm, eventually can, and then he UFOs him and everyone goes home happy, and then they decide to bloody 50-50 it because of course they sodding do. And also, yeah, the triple threat, Roman Reigns, Edge, Daniel Bryan. It was a surreal experience, like you said. Didn't expect Edge to get that reception. And we were sat there going, oh, well, you know, the champ doesn't need to be pinned. I'm not sure if they've mentioned this before. Champ doesn't need to be pinned in a triple threat match. So maybe, just maybe, they crown Daniel. Nope. No, Roman Reigns sacks both of them. And it just is a real sign of intent by WWE. But yeah, time has no meaning. Apologies if I've missed out your favourite match because, I just can't remember half the stuff that's happened this year already.
It sort of feels like, I think the thing with WrestleMania, and I guess for Double or Nothing, if there had been that one match that anybody listened, because we haven't mentioned it, particularly loved at Double or Nothing, certainly crowds at WrestleMania like were elevating things, weren't they? I think especially when you mentioned Seth Rollins and Cesaro, how made Cesaro briefly felt because he was doing all that cool stuff in front of a noisy audience again. It always feels like cheating to say a Rumble, but not all Rumbles are awesome. And the Women's Rumble this year was awesome. Like, it's not a guarantee that a Royal Rumble is going to be like this fantastic spectacle, and the Women's Rumble this year nailed it.
Absolutely. Next question today comes from regular contributor and huge fan. Thank you for this. Hugo, who says, love you both to death. Love you too, Hugo. Thank you so much, as always, for being in contact. Would you honestly bring Shayna back to NXT, or is she forever doomed as long as her contract reads WWE?
Love you, Hugo. Thank you for that. I don't know. I try and take a pragmatic approach on the old doomed stuff these days. I watch Raw every week and Alexa Bliss feels doomed. And then she tweets that she's quite enjoying playing the character at the moment. And we know based on them goddamn Fiend belts that she's probably coining it in on the merch as well. Jesus Christ, can you imagine the money she's going to make when they start flogging Lily dolls at those arenas when people are back in seats, right? Like, so... doomed is something of a relative term. I feel creatively Shayna Baszler is absolutely doomed. However, I think she is doing what Vince McMahon would rather see her do. And everybody has a boss. And as much as we would all love to do everything we would just want to do in our jobs, everybody has a boss, including Shayna Baszler. And Shayna Baszler came up to the main roster being the closest approximation of NXT Shayna Baszler. Ignore that vampire night on Raw. But other than that, was the closest approximation to NXT Shayna Baszler, and we were told that Vince McMahon didn't get it. Remember that story breaking? Doesn't get it. Doesn't get the appeal. Start it again. Make her the designated jobber in a team with Nia Jax. Have her be somebody that is taught to sports entertain with wobbly legs and running from a doll and all that, and her boss is satisfied, and it might lead to a pay rise, and it might lead to the health, wealth, happiness of Shayna Baszler, the person. I appreciate what Hugo's saying because I agree. As a wrestling fan, I get no joy out of this. But the longer Shayna sticks around and gets through... It's a bit like, I don't know if I'm dating myself here, but The Krypton Factor Assault Course was a particularly tough one when it was aired on television here in the UK. And some of my favourite wrestlers feel like they're often doing the hardest parts of the Krypton Factor Assault Course just to get to the zip line at the end where things are actually nice and things are actually good. If Shayna Baszler can get through the mud and the A-frame and the cargo net and all the things that really, really punish you, maybe in 5 years' time, she'll get to be the Shayna Baszler that you want to dread and run from. Maybe these are the hard yards. You've got to win Vince's trust and win his respect and all that nonsense. It's total nonsense, by the way. But maybe that's just how the wheels turn. And if we all ride this out together, once she's got that trust, we all might get a little bit of what we want. NXT, at this point, feels like a waste of time because the damage that's been done to her aura on the main roster, I don't think can be repaired. Love Finn Balor, but did he ever properly shake that off in NXT? I'm not so sure he did. I'm not sure. I think he's proven that it's maybe not quite a quick fix that we all believed it might once be.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have that much optimism. I think you've got more chance of winning Takeshi's Castle than Shayna Baszler really re-establishing herself. What happened between February? Well, in wrestling, I mean, I know what happened in the world. What happened in between February of 2020 and April of 2020? Because that Elimination Chamber, I know people aren't happy with it. And people say, oh, you're always so negative about her. Me and Phil Chambers weren't on that night. I thought it was one of the most perfect displays I've ever seen inside the Elimination Chamber. Immediately forgot about her not winning the Rumble or her biting bloody Becky Lynch's neck. She was inevitable. And Becky Lynch was Rocky at the start of Rocky 3. Buying stupid bloody trucks with her face on, wearing crowns and meme sunglasses. She was ripe for murder, effectively, in the ring by Shayna Baszler. And then she rolled Shayna up and it's been downhill since then.
I just want to let the listeners to this podcast know, because I know they've heard that impassioned, heartbroken rant before, that don't think, everybody, that this is just on-the-clock stuff. Some point in the very near future, myself and Adam Wilborn are going to be a few pints deep. And as he gets to number three or number four, it's coming out again. There's going to be some tables punched. There's going to be some sort of hands gesticulating in the air. At least one beer is going to go flying. This is for real. I can see it in your eyes every time you speak on this subject, how broken you were by it.
It's because I was like late to the Shayna party. I was late to the NXT party. And I came in and went, well, this is great. I seem to They were like, oh, brilliant. Look, Kairi Sane's beating her. And then the next time, nah, see you later. Out you go. And yes, you had, you know, the four horsewomen or two of the four horsewomen helping her out. But that just added to the beauty of it all. Oh, what could have been? Speaking of Keith Lee, I mentioned him earlier on. Great question here from Jason DeCastro, who says, what do you think about Keith Lee going back to NXT rather than on Raw and have a match against Karrion Kross, the NXT championship?
Thank you, Jason. I'm not mad keen on the match, if I'm honest, because I don't think the first one was particularly great. Keith Lee, it almost feels like now that main roster run was a false start, doesn't it? If anything, this break that he's on, this kind of like mysterious disappearance of Keith Lee for the time being, might allow for a hard reset when he comes back, wherever he comes back, main roster or NXT. Unlike Shayna Baszler and unlike Finn Balor, of people that come back to NXT and probably too much damage has been done, I don't hate that quite as much because it doesn't feel like Keith Lee has sustained half as much damage as those aforementioned names and maybe others that could come back to NXT. So I wouldn't be totally against it. I would, however, question, and we bring this up quite a lot, I don't know what kind of shelf life that character would have on NXT, as much as I completely understand why people are thirsty for this, because NXT is a safer haven. We quibble the booking sometimes in NXT, but it's a way better show than Raw, and often it's a better show than the majority of SmackDown, Roman Reigns notwithstanding. It's just a tighter show. So theoretically, characters will do better on the tighter show. I don't know about Keith Lee because I am a little bit sick of a lot of NXT long-standing people that are still on NXT. I'm ready for several people to just, like, for WWE to take the gamble and lift several of these people that we really like on NXT and just see how they fare on Raw or SmackDown. And I worry that Keith Lee would feel ancient if he went back. I know he's only been away 6 months, but, like, timing in wrestling is cruel. And I think that window's kind of slammed shut on him.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, let's continue some more of your wrestling questions from Twitter. As I always say, at WhatCultureWWE, at Michael Hanfler, at Adam Wilborn. If you want to send us more or continue the conversation, we also answer them every single morning on the news as well. Hanfler, I can warn you, any adverts that have played out in this podcast have already happened. So feel free to answer this and annoy as many people as you want. I know my answer is probably going to boil your piss. This question comes from Mark Lee Willis, who says, what misconception about wrestling did you once have that you no longer hold, possibly because of how companies, WWE, have led you to believe otherwise? Hope you're well, dude. Thank you, Mark. Hope you're well too, mate.
Thank you, Mark. Am I going first here because you worry that I'm going to like switch the podcast off once you tell me whatever yours is? Is that okay? Mine is a broader one that I think does relate to WWE being bad, but it's a wrestling thing, it is. And it kind of dawned on me over the last few years, in truth. My misconception is that a particular match or a particular wrestler or a particular promo, something really specific can magically get somebody who's not into wrestling into wrestling. I think for a lot of years, because I love this art form so much and because I cannot for the life of me, and I'm glad I'm speaking to friends that are listening to this podcast and speaking to you right now, everyone outside of this bubble that we're in, I can't understand why they're not into wrestling.
Yeah,
it's the best thing. It's the best thing, right? When it's good. And even sometimes when it's awful, it's the best thing. And I can't understand why everybody doesn't get it. However, there was a key turning point in my life. And it wasn't over one match or one wrestler in particular where it just clicked that. And people ask this question sometimes. I'm sure you get it on the news and we sometimes get it on this podcast. What one match would you show somebody that's not into it to explain to them why you like wrestling? What one match would you show a partner who doesn't understand why you like it? Those sort of questions. You just get it or you don't. It will hook you or it won't. It's not like much else, you know. It's not a sport, but we know how much of a sport it really is. It's not athletics, but we know how athletic they are. It's not acting, but we know how hard they have to work every time they show up at Raw and they've got 15 minutes to learn material because their boss just tore at what they've been learning all day. Like, every aspect of it. It's the hardest frigging job in the world because, look, wherever you're listening to this, Wilborn, you right now, we're sat down at a desk. Look at the floor next to your feet and ask yourself if you would throw yourself to the floor from the height you're at. You wouldn't. And yet they do that as the first. It's like us clocking in on the morning. Us logging into Slack for us is them throwing themselves onto the ground from whatever height they happen to be at. It's insane. It's amazing. Superhuman. It's the best. It's the best thing. And when it's good dramatically, it's like nothing. It's like I feel things for wrestling that I cannot feel even for my favorite television shows. As good as it gets. Sopranos, Wire, BoJack Horseman. Great podcast out there called Podcast Horseman. Check it out. Like, I love those shows more than most things. And yet wrestling, when it gets me more than all of those. Football, the same. It's a sport. But how often does that sport fail me and let me down because my team are terrible? Wrestling doesn't if it tells the story effectively. But you can't say that to anybody that just doesn't get it. You can't. And I'll include certain family members I've got, certain friends that have known me as their wrestling friend all of my stupid life. Like, they'll always ask the same questions. Yeah, but yeah, it's fake. And that conversation is boring, isn't it? You know, that... I can say to them, I was probably 6 years old when I worked out that it was fake. And what you have to understand is that that's never bothered me, that I, you know, that I've known it not to be real.
Yeah, you fantasy book Game of Thrones or whatever it may be.
Exactly. It's a pointless pursuit to try and sell wrestling on somebody that just doesn't get it. And I say that as like a kind of, as a call to arms for those people that are maybe still trying, or those people that still believe it can be done, because just accept that it's their loss.
It's a really, like, it's really interesting and so spot on in terms of, like, it's the same as anything else. You could turn around to someone who loves wrestling but doesn't like football and go, sorry, how do you not like football? Have you not seen, like, the incredible comeback from Liverpool and Istanbul and the story that comes with that? Or Aguero, last minute, Manchester City in the Premier League for the first ever time. Just bonkers stuff. Don't like it. The only thing I can compare it to, because I like most things, I like wrestling, but I also like UFC. And I'm astonished sometimes that wrestling can't have the storylines that UFC has when they can't control the results. Yeah. But the only thing I can compare it to in terms of just not getting it at all is a little bit like my relationship with one Josh Brown. Lovely man, handsome man, gorgeous man. Got a lot of similar tastes, a lot of similar views, whether it be politics or music or whatever it may be. And yeah, he likes Gilmore Girls. And I honestly, I think genuinely it's the worst TV show I've ever seen. I genuinely cannot get my head around how anyone can actually sit down and go, no, I'm going to dedicate my time to this. And that's the only thing I can compare people watching Monday Night Raw to.
He remains a man of refined taste because the Gilmore Girls is class. You have one of these for me. I know to you to be a man that if time were no object and you didn't need to work, you would happily sit and watch every single Olympic sport one after another, after another, after another, just for the sheer competitive thrill of it. And yet it boils my piss no end that I can't get to talk to you about snooker. This is your one like sporting black spot. When I look at it as like the sport of kings, and you're just like, I remember just like coming in one morning after like Ronnie had done something awesome. I think you've won a world title last year, or maybe the year, but like something brilliant. And I was like, oh my God, shaking. I was at 1 a.m. watching this after the kids had gone to bed. And you're just like, I don't get it. I was like, Adam Wilborn, you're enthusiastic about everything. Like, you see an insect on your window and that takes up the first 10 minutes of our podcast, and I can't sit you in front of this, like, sporting art on the telly. We've all got our black spots, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I distinctly remember coming in after England won the Cricket World Cup for a live stream, I think, and Andy Murray could not have been less interested in me, one of the giddiest men in all of what culture. We've been friends for a long time now, Michael Hamblett, so I do hope you'll take this in the right way. But I read this and I thought, oh yeah, I'm gonna have to reveal that, aren't I now?
I'm really nervous about this.
This was coming from a place of ignorance, not knowledge. He's talking about, you know, just misconceptions. Considering how old I am, considering the era that I grew up in, I kind of thought Bret Hart was really overrated.
I know you did, mate, because loads of people did, because for years that discourse needed turning around. That narrative needed flipping.
I never, when I was just a casual fan of wrestling, why would I need to go back and watch these matches? And no one's singing their praise about him. And obviously, terrible, terrible story behind it. But he's not wrestling anymore, so don't need to pay any attention to him. And obviously, starting working at What Culture and just getting more and more interesting prior to that really opened my eyes. And then I just remember that. It's Tom McGee, the documentary.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I just, that was the real moment where, oh yeah, now it all. Like, I'd appreciated his work and gone, oh yeah, he's a sensational wrestler, and I've got that completely wrong. But that was like the final nail in the coffin for that viewpoint. Like, Jesus, look how good he can make this lad look, and then you see him with anyone else, and he's just atrocious.
Yeah. He's an artist, and that canvas was his canvas, wasn't it? It's fine, you know, it's fine. Us in the Bret Hart community, and you notice I didn't put the AJ Styles inflection on it because I got too much goddamn respect for it. It's a real community. We came up against that opposition for a lot of years for a lot of the same reasons. And it's just lovely. Have you noticed in the last few years? I think two things have happened. Number one, people in their 30s have got a little bit louder on Twitter. And number two, Shawn Michaels has kind of ruined NXT. So people putting those two opposing forces constantly against one each other. A load of people have started being like, oh yeah, I should have been a Bret Hart guy all along. Now me, love Bret Hart, but like Shawn Michaels. I think it's absolutely fine to go back and enjoy Shawn Michaels. But when the people make that decision over the divide, I'm like, yeah, get him, like that.
It was a revelation akin to Paul Bearer. Wait, Paul Bearer? Like, because he's with the Honestly, I do not want to admit when that eureka moment came to me, because it was years too late.
I had one of these. I was talking about this with my wife yesterday. A bit embarrassed. My wife was telling one of our sons about very, very tall buildings having lights on top so that planes can see them. Mm-hmm. And the kids love seeing like images of New York and things like that. And she said, hey, you see that on the towers in New York? And I later admitted to her when we'd had this conversation with the kids that I discovered that, much to my absolute horror and shame. I used to work in an old job that I was very fortunate once to fly to Kuala Lumpur for work purposes in Malaysia. And I'm not the most well-traveled of people, and I'd never seen these lights on top of these buildings. And I worked at a university, and I was with some academics, and I asked one of the academics, I said, a lot of the buildings here have like lights on the top of the building. Is that like a local architectural thing, is it? And he just turned to me and said, no, they're really tall and it's so planes don't crash into them. I was like 25. I was like, well, too old. And it's not one of them things you can just quietly Google once it's out there, once it's been said. It's like, no, you know, like, I felt like he wanted to go, do you know aeroplanes? They're really high in the sky.
I'm not going to name names here, but I will say it's not a member of the What Culture Wrestling team. Do you remember that moment in the office once where it was around this time of year, hot in the What Culture office, and the bosses are talking about either, you know, buying or bringing in or setting up whatever it was, fans in the office, and someone who will not be named went, what's the point of that? It'll just move the hot air around. And yes, I get after that's what fans do. That's why they don't use fans in certain things. And I was watching a John Oliver thing randomly about heat in prison, saying that is the case, but not in an office in Newcastle.
I remember that message coming around, and I seem to remember replying, yeah, actually, I'm absolutely fine with that. Bring in anybody but Matt Reigns. And I realized what they were actually talking about. Yeah.
Right, back to some more of your Twitter questions. And not for the first time, I'm going to have to disappoint a doctor here. Dr. Scott Kelly says, I don't think any of my AEW fan friends actually think Vicky Guerrero is wrestling with Nyla and Britt and Rebel this Saturday. If that's the case, who will be her replacement? And unfortunately, Dr. Scott, we're not going to answer your question now. We are, though, on the AEW Dynamite preview that is coming out on Saturday. Mark it in your diaries. We're going to be recording it tomorrow, and then it's Friday night. They're inevitably going to announce, I don't know, Daniel Bryan's coming to AEW or something, because that's generally what happens once we record these podcasts in advance. A question you will like here, though, comes from Jacob Mendros, who says, good morning, my friends. I know Hamlet and I are the world's biggest supporters of Trunks, Moxley, and that entire run. Question is, do you think that now in international travel is returning to normal, we will finally see Renee and Mox adopt Shuda legally and bring him to the US?
You asked that question, sorry?
Jacob Mendros.
Thank you, Jacob. A man of immense taste, indeed. Trunks, Mox. Short answer, yeah. The prospect of, like, the two of them reuniting, dare I say this, in AEW is as captivating as the prospect of John Moxley putting on the trunks and meeting up with him in New Japan. I say that because in New Japan, obviously, Moxley would wear the trunks again. They'd do an awesome press conference where it'd be father and son reunited and all that. But I love the idea, and I've thought this for a while. I think I might have mentioned it on the podcast when the Forbidden Door first opened, of Shuda encountering some problems on the AEW roster. Like, imagine, like, like Kenny and the boys getting to Shuda before Moxley does. Like a vignette where they're picking him up from the airport and he's waiting for dad. And instead they turn up and they just leave him a bloody mess. And John Moxley is out for revenge on behalf of Shuda. And the two of them come out together and he's banged up and he's got his leather jacket and all that sort of stuff. Like John Moxley cuts his promo. He's like, I invite a man to my home and this is what you do to him. I love the idea of all of this taking place within the AEW universe as much as back in New Japan. Yes, my word, the second restriction is lift. Put them two back together. We all miss it. Everybody misses it.
Absolutely. Right, let's lightning round a few questions here. The H stands for, writes, as a founding member of the Dudley Boys, A, will there ever be merch? And B, what's your advice for getting children into wrestling? And is this advisable?
Merch, Hound, editor at whatculture.com for that one, I think. News.whatculture.com, I don't know, whatever our main address is from the website. Bombard them, let them know. The kids in wrestling, I don't know, I got an 8 and a 5-year-old and they're just not feeling it. I'm not so sure, and I don't think all AEW fans are like me saying this, I'm not so sure there's a product that's perfect for kids at the moment. I say that because WWE is sub-children in terms of its presentation. Babies might like the colours, but there is absolutely nothing a five-year-old will get from WWE that he's not getting from CBeebies, 100%. Like, it's far more, I watch, like, children's programming, it's 10 times more logical than an episode of Raw. So it's just, it's too hard to explain. I use the example of The Fiend. Like, my son, my youngest son was really captivated by the look of The Fiend. He asked a few questions. I can answer about two of them because there's absolutely, that character makes no goddamn sense. And I needed to put it in a way that a five-year-old would understand. Me as a five-year-old, there's a giant man in neon paint and he's an ultimate warrior and he's squashing fellas. Got it. Brilliant. More, please. It's a sugar rush. Can't give that to my kids presently. AEW, way more logical. Makes loads more sense. Again, it's the same as the answer to before. Can't force it on them. They've just got to get it. Some of it, I don't mean to sound like a prude, isn't massively child friendly. There's a lot of swearing. There's like maybe more blood than you want your kids to see. That's at your discretion, all that sort of stuff. Definitely, I will, as long as AEW remains roughly a version of itself, get them to 9, get them to 10, and then I will just sit them in front of it and see if they stay sitting down. That's all that you can do. Like, or put it on at 9 o'clock at night when they know that they're being allowed to stay up late and they'll stay up for they'll stay up for out if they think they're getting away with one. They'll sit there quiet on the sofa thinking you forget that they're there. So that might be another way in as well. Quick on this, and then sorry, I know this is supposed to be a lightning round. My kid wants, my eldest, when he was about 6, going back, maybe a bit older, he woke up in the middle of the night, he was a bit tired. It was only about 10 p.m. and my wife was out, so I happened to be watching. I was re-watching Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan, and it only just started, and he asked me, who's the goodie, who's the baddie? I told him, sure enough, the match played out exactly as I needed it to. And he got it and he loved it and he was really pleased to see the good guy win. So if you're absolutely going to try, just rattle your brain for something that you absolutely know the lines aren't remotely blurred. Like, keep it not patronizingly simple, but keep it nice and simple and at least give them a chance. Don't like go for some sort of 50-50 things like, yeah, but you've got to appreciate how well he's selling the arm, because that's the stuff they've got to see rather than be told.
L says, do you think when live crowds come back, so will jobbers and put an end to the constant rematches?
Thank you, El. I'd like it. I think we've long called for jobber matches. We get a bit of it. We get a little bit of it here and there on AEW and WWE, and it's never not effective. So, yes, I would absolutely... I think it benefits a TV show. I think, as well, we've talked about how problematic it is trying to book monsters as weekly episodic characters for longer than, say, 6 months at a time. You can stretch that out. Ryback got WWE one of the best B-show pay-per-view buy rates ever, and most of that was done off the back of squashing jobbers 6 months before he faced CM Punk. So, yeah, it can be done.
Joshua Mitchison says, if you could see one person pushed and booked by fans, who would it be? I'd say Liv Morgan, as the fan support she has and the amount of talent she has in too good to be in the mid-card, she is.
Yeah. Thank you, Joshua, for that question. It's a great shout. Joshua knows the medium he's talking about there, because a lot of people do seem to have a lot of love for Liv Morgan. I guess you're trying to think of those other fan favourite ones. There is never bad fantasy booking out there about Hangman Page. It just differs from one fan to the next. So I've never seen a Hangman Page scenario I haven't liked, but just everybody's got a different opinion on it because that character's so well drawn. So Hangman Page as well, I would genuinely, they've done such an amazing job of putting him where he is that I would entrust almost every scenario I've read about Hangman Page.
I'll say The Fiend, just to stir the pot a little bit.
I've had enough lore this year. I don't need any more till 2022.
I just love the idea of going, okay, we'll do a fan thing. Just submit your ideas on a tweet. The amount of different ideas. Oh. No one's going to say, like, we can book Big E winning the world title easily. The Fiend and his next 6 months. Good luck, everyone. Final question today comes from James. James says he's asked questions about 10 times and we never got around to him, so I'll finally get around it. It's a great question, to be fair. With the hashtag huge pop, he writes, biggest pop of your life watching wrestling.
Oh, God. Thank you, James. Can I have in person and on television?
Yes.
Is that all right? They're different pops, aren't they? It's really got to get you out of your seat when you're watching it at home on television. Mm-hmm. So one would be Steve Austin every single week in 1998. The product was that good when I was 13. Like, unbelievable weekly. How he would get the better of Vince McMahon at least once during those brawls was electrifying. As a grown-up, because I often think it saved my wrestling soul when I felt myself pulling away from it, Bayley beating Sasha in Brooklyn was really emotional, really evocative. NXT was the biggest thing in the world to me. That storyline was the biggest thing in the match. It just delivered the best thing I've seen since Bret and Steve Austin. So I loved it. In person, we talked about this a lot recently on NXT reviews. I'm all about getting gabboed, man. Just tell me, just sell me an empty mystery and I'll buy a ticket. And the two times I was given just the greatest payoffs to empty mysteries was Kevin Owens War Games in 2019. Oof. Like, blowing the goddamn roof off the All-State in Chicago.
2 days ago, yeah.
Privileged to be a part of that ovation, and I was there contributing to it. And I know I've mentioned this on another podcast, working one house show on a random UK tour in 2011, The Miz and R-Truth, preparing to take on John Cena, Zack Ryder, and Kofi Kingston in, you're right to think this, a pretty boring-sounding house show six-man tag. When The Miz said the words over the house microphone, Newcastle, England, I think we need 7 foot of backup. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. And there he was, the big man, working one warm-up match for his sledgehammer ladder match to pay off the summer of Punk. The following month. One warm-up match, and he comes to Newcastle, and he works in the sixth man. Took one bump for a leg. I think it was a John Cena punch, because he's the best at this.
Yeah,
I absolutely lost my mind.
I remember the anti-pop that I got at the WWE live show that you and I went to with Adam Nichols. Where we'd read online that, I can't remember who he was facing, but it was, you know, some generic mid-carder versus Titus O'Neil. And we're all sat there, my wife is there with us. She knows how giddy I am to see Titus live and in person. And I can't remember. It must have been like, was it Apollo's music? Someone else's music. Like, I'm doing the Hogan cup to the ear. Like, here it comes. You know,
it was fighting like Curtis Axel or somebody, wasn't it? There's Curtis Axel. And we're like, everybody's bored. Nobody cares. But we know who's coming. And we're excited. Like, the building couldn't give a toss. It was the popcorn match. But like, we were excited for you. Here it comes. Here it comes. Here it comes.
And then Apollo Crews' music. He did wrestle. We did wrestle later on, and I did have a huge bab at that point, but it was just hilarious. I just, you know, when you just, everyone's laughing, you know, your friends are all laughing at you, and you just have to take it. You can't, like, excuse it. Yeah. You just have to just let it rain down upon you. And then later on, we were all together when Titus did actually come out, and I was screaming how much I loved him, because I'd had a few more pints to dry my sorrows at this time. TV reactions. It's all mainly, I'm not thinking automatically of surprise, I'm thinking of match conclusions. I was very, very clueless when it comes to Survivor Series 2001 and genuinely thought, well, if they lose this, the company's finished. So The Rock winning Survivor Series, it's The Rock, it's my favourite wrestler of all time. That's one of them. And also randomly, mainly this was sort of the stars combining, or, you know, coming together or whatever, aligning, that's the word I was looking for. Shinsuke Nakamura winning the Royal Rumble, which won me the What Culture Wrestling Championship. And like, he beat Roman, and that was the midst of everyone going, oh, Roman's winning this then. Beats Roman. He wins that. It's our first live stream together. Like, me, Cleary, Nicholas, all the, you know, all the usual lot, right? And I remember I got so giddy, and we'd had a few pints at this point, but still not too much, bosses. We were, you know, professionally working. I had to have a sit down afterwards. I had an adrenaline dump, and there was a bit where I was like, oh, I need like a cup of tea or something to calm myself down after all this. So there's that, but the in-person ones are the ones that I immediately look to. Johnny Gargano doing the impossible takeover, still my favorite wrestling match ever. And especially informed by the fact of like the Undisputed Era get involved, and you go, well, I know how this ends. He's dealt with all of them. He's going to turn around straight into a last shot, job done sort of thing. And it didn't happen, obviously. And I changed my mind on who I supported and blah, blah, blah. And I have to say, the Iconics winning the tag titles. I lost my voice at WrestleMania. You know, I was emotional when Kofi Kingston won. I was ecstatic when Becky Lynch won, mainly because that meant we also got to go home at that point. But the Iconics were such a hilarious combination of like, oh, that's your thing. What's your thing? Oh, I do the Australian accent. I like the Iconics. And they're the fourth team making up the numbers in this tag match. And the fact that we were up in the gods in MetLife and I still saw the Iconics are legal, the tag, the blind tag to, I think, Beth Phoenix, because she hit the top rope glam slam and then got shot on Bailey. And I saw it and I grabbed Adam Cleary's leg, said the line, say the line, Bart, the Iconics are legal. And I remember Chris Thompson was recording bits and bobs for our like documentary and stuff. And I must have been yelling down the camera in an Australian accent for 5 minutes. And then by the time whatever the next match started, I suddenly went, oh no, I've got work to do later and I've got no voice. Hence why one of our most listened to podcasts, the post WrestleMania 35 review podcast, took place at like 6 a.m. in the room that me and Nicholas were staying in, with Nicholas and Cleary shifting their weight every 5 seconds so they didn't fall asleep. And B, it's me going, welcome to the world, because I've got no voice left. I've used it all up, maybe doing What Went Down if we're lucky. And it will be a memory that will stay with me forever. That.
Find that podcast in the archives if you can, because it's a great listen by great men doing great work. And while you're digging around the What Culture archives, look for one of my favourite Adam Wilborn pops, which is, I believe, the Elimination Chamber 2018, could be 2019. Yeah, maybe 2019, which is Nia Jax going through the glass pod. Have a look at that one if you can, because you're talking about real, guttural, visceral reactions to a sight they can't quite believe they're seeing. That is one of the greats. That's a last-minute winner pop, that one.
That and her getting eliminated from the Royal Rumble. I remember that as well.
Yeah. I think any time that, like, the relief that washes over you when Nia Jax isn't going to win a match that you worried she might, it just all floods out.
Well, let us know your biggest wrestling pops ever on Twitter and your thoughts on everything we've discussed today. At What Culture WWE, as always, we'll do these Q&As again. They're so much fun. You can follow both of us on Twitter whilst you're there. You can follow Michael Hamplett at...
Don't follow me. I don't need followers. My content's not good enough. Instead, do something good with your Twitter. Block Matt Reigns. if you must, it's at Michael Hamplett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. But this has been your questions answered. My thanks to everyone who submitted questions on Twitter. Thank you to Michael Hamplett for joining me. Thanks for listening. And we will see you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.